And welcome into the Bonanza After Party. My name is Nicholas Hodel. Nick Keneally out today, hoping to get him back on the shows next week. Happy to have you alongside for this edition of the After Party. Got three very solid topics, I think, to discuss over the course of the next half hour or so. We're going to start off with what I think should be a really good debate out west, and one that should be actively happening right now. The Pac-12 versus the Mountain West. We're back in this spot for the second consecutive year now, after the Mountain West got more bids in the 2022 NCAA tournament than the Pac-12, and it looks like it might be happening again. As we look at these two conferences in detail, the Pac-12 is looking like three projected tournament teams right now, and a fourth intriguing one. You have your two surefires, Arizona and UCLA. I love what USC has been doing as of late. The Trojans have put themselves in a really good position over the course of the last couple of weeks with a couple of quad one victories at Arizona State and an upset win against UCLA. They have risen into the right side of the bubble, and with the way they're trending, they might be able to stay there as a few brackets on Sunday. Some bracket challengers had them, 9-10 seed. I mean, I would call that a little aggressive, but certainly USC has proven they are a tournament team. Meanwhile, Arizona State, as of Sunday, fell to the last team in the projected field of 68 in 54 of 81 different bracketologies, and many recent bracketologies have taken Arizona State out of the field. They are relying on brackets going into the last week. So Arizona State's time in the matrix projected field may be over, likely to be replaced by Pittsburgh, but that's a topic for another day. Oregon and Utah, they are analytical darlings, but they have not much going on for them. Utah is in an interesting spot. They have so much work to do, though. Them and Oregon. Oregon has been very disappointing over the course of this particular season. So much was expected from them. Instead, 13-9, a couple of Q3 losses, not doing them very well. Utah is in the net top 50 as of Sunday night. No bad losses, but 2-4 in the top two quadrants has really put them in a bad spot of 15-8, needing to get some quality wins over the course of the next few weeks. And with the Pac-12, not a ton of opportunities, about half their schedule remaining is in the top quadrant. You go further down, Washington State and net in the top 70 and net as of Sunday, but really their season, they're really going nowhere at this point. They might serve to play spoiler, as Wazoo did against Arizona State in the weekend. Colorado, a 12-11 Q4 loss. Four Q3 losses. I think that's the surprising part. Colorado, for me, has been a random number generator, and quite frankly, they continue to be so. Meanwhile, the rest of the conference, putrid. I mean, Washington has a winning record, but not really going anywhere. Stanford, Oregon State, and especially Cal, not good seasons for really any of those teams. Meanwhile, out in the Mountain West, you have five teams who are in the top 40 of net going into the week. Boise State at 22, San Diego State at 23, New Mexico at 30, Utah State at 34, and Nevada at 37. The bracketologists said Utah State has some work to do. Two quadrant four losses will certainly do that to you in record time. Meanwhile, Nevada firmly on the bubble themselves at 15-6, while Boise State, San Diego State, and New Mexico can feel pretty comfortable at this stage, though some more work is needed for them to become surefire teams, in my opinion. Meanwhile, UNLV could be playing some spoiler here. In the top 75 in net as of Sunday night at 13-7. Three Q3 losses will make it next to impossible, though, for the Rebels to get in on an at-large basis. And perhaps they could play spoiler to some of these big dreamers in the Mountain West. I mean, it's Mountain West, you'd like to be able to get four of the five, or perhaps the Rebels takes out one, leaves you with three. San Jose State and Colorado State are what I would call analytical darlings to an extent. They have not had good years. They're both in the net top 125 of Sunday night, especially Colorado State at 9-12, being at 124 in the net. Wow, Air Force still lurking around the top 150, not quite there, 12-10. Fresno State, Wyoming have not had the years they have wanted. But the bottom is still in that top 200. It's not where the Pac-12 is at the moment. That's the big reason why the Mountain West has quite the advantage. It is a nearly 5-point advantage in the average net going into Sunday, and that'll probably stay around the same going into this next late midweek and weekend of games. And it really makes the conversation interesting of which of these West Coast conferences is the better conference right now. And I honestly believe it is the Mountain West. And the reason why I say that is there are more must-watch games in the Mountain West Conference than the Pac-12. In the Pac-12, you have more teams that can play spoiler to you than the Mountain West. If you're in San Diego State, New Mexico, Boise State, Nevada, Utah State, you can play really good games against each other and honestly still be okay. In the Pac-12, Arizona, UCLA are the only ones that could say that. USC is getting to a point to where they're there. They can get there. ASU has learned the lesson quickly, losing to Washington and Washington State on the road. They've learned that lesson quickly. They have fallen, I think, out of the bubble. I'm going to be honest. They need to work their way back into the bubble for me. First four out, next four out. We need to be talking about ASU as like a next four out team, in my opinion. I don't think they're there. I mean, two really not so good road losses. They're quality loss to an extent, yes, but it's all going to add up. It's making 3 weeks of must-win games, and I really believe that for those who are Arizona State supporters, you know this story. Having 3 weeks of must-win games typically does not go very well. So I'll leave it at that there. Oregon and Utah, they are purely spoilers at this point, in my opinion. If they find a way to strengthen wins together, they're fine, but they are purely spoilers, as is the rest of the conference. The whole reason why I see the Mountain West is the better conference. Like I said, there are more games that you can consider watchable, in my opinion. Games amongst nearly half the conference, or over half the conference, in the case of UNLV, are watchable, entertaining games. That's my whole reason for it. And the fact that we're having this discussion, and the fact that I think the Mountain West is the better conference than the Pac-12 in men's basketball, should be incredibly concerning for the Pac-12 conference. It should be incredibly concerning because we now are having this conversation for the second consecutive year. At this point, it should be embarrassing to the Pac-12 conference that we, as a power conference, really can't put together three teams that are surefire NCAA tournament teams. At the conference level, you have to be thinking, what in the world are we doing? Especially with USC and UCLA off to the Big Ten, what are we doing as a conference? Should be the mindset of the Pac-12. At the conference level, what are we doing? What are we doing? I truly believe that needs to be the question being asked within the conference. Now, you remove UCLA and USC. Oregon is probably the next candidate that will become the second surefire team program. Who else is in line? It's going to be a rotating basis. No one knows. You'll be in the same spot that you're in now. And that's not good for a power conference. I'm almost at the point to where we have this debate another year. Mountain West still at the top's better in depth. You remove UCLA, USC out of the equation. We could be talking about a near major conference in men's basketball at the Pac-12. That is, quite frankly, simply embarrassing. And I say that with that tone, because as a Pac-12 student at Arizona State University, this is getting really frustrating to see another West Coast conference, one I consider to be a near-major conference, and a status below the Pac-12, yet again, be better than the Pac-12 at the top in its depth. Arizona and UCLA may be better than all five teams that are in that categorization. Sure, I'll give you that. But when that's it, when your third and fourth place teams are bubble teams? Come on. This has got to be embarrassing for the Pac-12. They're falling so far behind to the Big 12, the Big 10, the SEC, and the Big East. It's becoming a joke at this point. And at the conference level, I certainly hope discussions are made, though I don't know how much you can do. I really don't. Let's move on to another conversation that's going to make some people at Louisville perk their ears. Louisville Cardinals, they have been putrid. That's about the best I can give you there. A 10-game losing streak, 2-19 overall, no ACC win in 10 games. You're barely in the KenPom top 300 if you're the Louisville Cardinals. And quite frankly, competitiveness is down the tank for the Cardinals in ACC play. They've lost their last five games by 10 or more points. They've had a couple of close shaves in the ACC schedule before that. But at this point, it is just turning into a disaster for Louisville. The only two wins are to Western Kentucky. I was actually surprised by this. They shot the ball really well in that game. They had really good shooting. Really good shooting. And I got to credit them for that. And Florida A&M. Those are their only two wins. In the non-conference, this is an embarrassing non-conference. Take a look and listen to this. Just the collection of losses. I'm sure this is just some of them. Bowerman, at home. Rice State, at home. Appalachian State, at home. Lincecum, at home. An absolutely embarrassing effort at the Maui Invitational for a legacy program like Louisville. Maryland, by 25 on the road. Kentucky, by 23 on the road. It's embarrassing. It should be embarrassing. Kenny Payne should be embarrassed. He should absolutely be embarrassed. And at this point, I don't think you can say there's hope left this season at Louisville. Might they be able to win a game in the ACC? Sure. They might be able to pull one off. I mean, if we just look at the schedule that we're talking about down the line for Louisville, you're looking at Georgia Tech at home, Florida State at home. This might be the best shot Louisville gets for an ACC win this week. Georgia Tech today, I'm going to get this out, in Florida State at home. Those are the two best shots. After that, you're at Pittsburgh, at Miami. Home against a really tough Virginia team. Home against a really good Clemson team that's been very surprised. We had a TigerIllustrated.com contributor, Grayson Mann, on Sunday night on the main show, which you can listen to right after you're done with this show on your preferred podcast platform. Really good segment. Highly recommend you check that out. At Duke, at Georgia Tech, home against Virginia Tech, and at Virginia. And that is the remaining schedule outside of the ACC tournament for Louisville. I see two opportunities for wins. KenPom's projections gives Louisville a 40% chance as of Sunday to win the game at home against Georgia Tech today. And a 33% chance to win the game at home against Florida State on Saturday. Everything else is 20% or lower, and five of those games are 6% or lower. This should not be happening at Louisville. This is an embarrassment of the absolute highest order at a history-rich program like Louisville. There's no question about it that this is unacceptable. And under a first-year coach like Kenny Payne, this kind of a year, again, should this continue? If Louisville finds a way to get two wins this week, pluck one or two against some good ACC competition over the course of the next few weeks, this part of the segment is moot point. Kenny Payne will have built some competitiveness in the back half of the ACC campaign. If he cannot do that, though, he really should be questioning himself. Okay, let me take that back. I was actually really bad at phrasing the question. This is what the question should be. Louisville should be questioning Kenny Payne's ability to coach at the University of Louisville. That's the main talking point here. Year one, you give Louisville their most embarrassing season in program history? To me, if this trend continues of just losing, 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 for Louisville to consider bringing Kenny Payne back honestly would be an embarrassment to the program. And if you do that, you better give them a short leash. As in, if it's not improved by the turn of the 2023 calendar year, you fire him. Quite frankly, I would fire him at the end of this year if this pace continues. Because this is an embarrassment. You simply cannot keep someone after 1 year who has given you your most embarrassing program season in your program's history. Excuse me. You can't. And sure, you might be waiting on him to get his guys in. Sure, you might be waiting to see what he does in the long term. Really just to see what you can get out of Kenny Payne in the development side of things. Sure, I wouldn't blame you if that was the case. I mean, let's take a look real quick at what Louisville is building in the 2023 team rankings according to Rivals in this thing, Lowe. I'll give that a minute. But recruiting-wise and coaching-wise are two different things. I've seen this firsthand at Arizona State, to where it is a little bit different. And just for us to look, Louisville is in third amongst the conference with a couple of 4-stars at this point in the rival rankings. That is 2 4-star 4s in the 2023 class, Curtis Williams Jr. and Caleb Glenn. You know, they have both previously signed. So you have 2 4-stars. What else do you get from the portal? That's going to determine if Kenny Payne has a chance of success. I don't know if I'd give him that shot. But at the same time, you got to think of this long term, right? Short-term reactions when it comes to decisions like these typically aren't the greatest. Typically are not the best. And firing Kenny Payne after a year would be a short-term reactionary move that might not get you anywhere. So you really got to be considerate of that. But then again, this is embarrassing. There is no one at the University of Louisville with an average height of 11th in the country. No one would tell you this is an acceptable season. No one. And it's not like we're talking about an experienced team here. Nearly dead last in Division I experience in this team. Well below average continuity in this team. 27.7% in the minutes continuity stat. It's a very new team. And there's so much at play when you look at this team that you really got to keep in mind. But there is no saving this team. I think the question that the University of Louisville needs to ask is, how much can we trust Kenny Payne to develop his recruits? Recruits already signed. Bring in players to the transfer portal to address your weaknesses. Develop the team, build team chemistry, go out in November 2023, and bring a competitive team to the table. That's the question. If the administration does not feel after this particular year that Kenny Payne can do that, they should give him the axe. If they can, they should give him a short leash. I get it's incredibly frustrating for Louisville right now. And I get that most people may want to fire him. I would fire him after this year because this is embarrassing. But if you give it a little more time, you might be able to figure out what Kenny Payne is actually capable of. And that might be the real question that Louisville might be wanting to answer. Finally, on the after party, I want to look at a few mid-major title races. We're going to start out at the Western Athletic Conference where things are interesting. There's a resume seeding system in place where it's all analytics. So traditional conference standings are a moot point. But if you were to go off of that, this is an interesting conference with many of the competitors in the KenPom Top 125. Utah Valley in the traditional conference standings top of the WAC at 8-2. 89th in KenPom. Really solid numbers overall on the board. Then you have a 3-way tie in the traditional standings between each other in Utah, Seattle, and Stephen F. Austin. All at 7-2, all out of the KenPom Top 100, but remaining competitive in the KenPom Top 125. The best team analytically, according to KenPom, is Sam Houston. A game behind those three at 6-3. 62nd in the KenPom metrics, 30th in adjusted defensive efficiency. What you'll see in the midweek is all of these teams have some easier games. Utah State Thursday at Utah Tech. The other competitors will play today. Southern Utah at Cal Baptist. Seattle against Abilene Christian at home. Stephen F. Austin at New Mexico State. By the way, they have been so disappointing this year. That's been quite the shame. And Sam Houston at UT Rio Grande Valley. Into the weekend, well, for Utah Tech, for either Utah, I should say there is no weekend game. For Southern Utah, they will play at Utah Tech. For Seattle, they will play at New Mexico State. And for Stephen F. Austin, they will play at GCU. GCU 5-4. That'll be a big game for positioning for GCU. They need to get that game. And then Sam Houston will play at UT Arlington. So there's not a lot of games between these, hardly any games at all, between those five teams within the week. What I'll be curious to see this week in the WAC is, do those five teams separate themselves from the rest of the conference traditional in the traditional standings? Resume seeding system aside, do these five teams show clear separation between themselves and the rest of the WAC? Or do one of these teams stumble? Do one of them take a turn? Any stumble at this point is probably a really bad thing that could knock them out. And we're relying on analytics. Or Sam Houston has an advantage based on their non-conference schedule. Let's actually take a look at the WAC resume seeding system. Now, keep in mind, these are daily updated numbers. All of this is as of Sunday. Keep that in mind. Sam Houston at 6-3. Remember how I said they're at fifth in the traditional standings? They top the resume seeding system at 4.2 points. And then it's Utah Valley, closely behind. Seattle about 0.4 of a point behind. Southern Utah another 0.8 of a point behind. GCU at fifth about 0.8 of a point behind. And then Stephen F. Austin, well behind the curve. So you can see really quickly how the resume seeding system and the traditional standings differ. Do I like that? Somewhat. Conference tournaments should absolutely be seeded based on what you do in the conference. Absolutely. And this resume seeding, as time has gone on, has provided a clear value for that. What it also takes into effect is your non-conference schedule. What you have done in the non-conference. Very unique. No other conference has done this. And Sam Houston, they are carrying the weight of a situation where on Sunday, they are still in that top 50. Which, by the way, really impressive for a mid-major team at 12-5. They are still carrying road quad one victories at Oklahoma and at Utah. Any conference tournament seeding system, I believe, would be completely unfair put a team over the top because of two quad one non-conference games. That is where I think this system gets it wrong. And where Sam Houston is going to benefit quite clearly from it. And they deserve it. I mean, those are two really, really good road wins. So Utah has remained analytically relevant. Relevant, in case you didn't catch that. Oklahoma, while they're dropping in the Big 12, they are still analytically relevant. It's a big thing for Sam Houston. And because of that, they're being given the benefit of the doubt. And look at them. On top of the resume seating system on Sunday. We'll see where things go, but it's very tight at the top. A little bit of a, so there are some tears forming, but quite frankly, if this system was not in place, it would be a really, really entertaining race. Over in the Mid-American Conference, Kent State and Akron are tied at the top at 7-1. Going into the week. Already have played their Tuesday games, so we won't have those records to rely on. But big matchup for them Friday between Kent State and Akron at Akron. This should be a very fun nationally televised game on Friday night. Highly encourage you to check it out. Kent State's defense analytically is one of the elite ones in the country. 24th in the adjusted defensive efficiency going into the week on Sunday night. Really good numbers and a lot of individual statistics. That's really the biggest difference for Kent State at this point. If they had not taken a loss at Northern Illinois, There's a solid shot that Kent State might be in my top 36 nationally right now, in my opinion. 17-4 right now. Looking really good. I mean, you look at some of their non-conference losses. A 2-point loss at Charleston. A 5-point loss at Houston, where they forced Houston to less than 50 points. And then another single-digit road loss at Gonzaga. This Kent State team is really competitive. Really competitive. And if they get into the tournament, they're going to give someone a lot of problems. I would love to see Kent State in the field of 68. But we'll see where things go there. Akron, by the way, riding a 6-game win streak into the midweek. Toledo is lurking at 6-2, a game behind with a nationally elite analytical offense at 15th in the adjusted offensive rankings as of Sunday night. They have a 5-game win streak themselves, but a really bad defense is holding back this analytically elite offense. A couple easy games for them this week. 2 meetings against Akron next Tuesday, February 7th, and then at home 2 weeks later. Those two games are going to be ones to watch in the conference. Certainly keeping an eye there. Over in the Horizon League, there is absolute madness going on here. Youngstown State, Cleveland State, Milwaukee, and Northern Kentucky are all 9-3. Youngstown State, the best team by KenPom standards. Other three teams have better analytical defenses. Milwaukee has a distinctively fast tempo. And with some exceptions, all these contenders have some meetings with each other. This is chaos. This is absolute chaos for these four teams to be so close to each other going into February. I love this. I absolutely love this. And you look at the weekend, they all have some easier games. Some could say child trap games. Youngstown State, they have a big meeting at home against Northern Kentucky coming up on Saturday. That one will be some interesting television on the streaming platforms. On Saturday at 7 Eastern. And then you look at what Cleveland State and Milwaukee are doing. Cleveland State is at Oakland on Saturday, and Milwaukee is at home against a truly putrid Green Bay team. I was just shocked to turn on the third game against Wright State, which is to find something to fill a quad box and find them at 2-20, now 2-21. Real was really surprised to find that out. Green Bay, IAPUI, Sickos Committee, if you're listening. Really interesting game for you guys out there. So it's madness right now. And I think the meetings against each other will be the true separators. And I honestly will be really fascinated to see how that regular season race ends. Gotta address the Charleston loss against Hofstra before we go away. Charleston's lead against Hofstra and now Towson in the CAA is down to a single game. The two teams will not meet again. But, big meeting February 23rd against Towson. Towson. That's a must-watch game in the Colonial. And Charleston, Wildcats have dropped out of the top 25. They'll probably have to call the way back. It's a shame, but that's kind of the short leash you're giving as a mid-major. Really, Charleston for an at-large contention might have to win out. As crazy as that sounds. We're going to wrap things up there for the after party this week. Again, starting night on Blaze Radio, 7 o'clock Arizona time. It will be a very fascinating Sunday show. The first one of February. I want to check that out. Again, I'm Nicholas Hodel. Hopefully you enjoyed the program. We'll catch you then on the Bonanza right here on your podcast platforms and live on Blaze Radio on BlazeRadioOnline.com.